Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Visioneering Technologies 4C Quarterly Investor Conference Call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Dr. Stephen Snoddy, CEO. Please go ahead.
Hello to all of you. Good morning. This is Stephen Snoddy, CEO of Visioneering Technologies, and I'm joined today by Brian Lane, our CFO, and Tony Sommer, our esteemed Senior Vice President of Sales and Marketing. We want to welcome you to our quarterly investor call for the quarter ended March 31st, 2019. We'll follow the usual format today. We're going to open with financial and operational recaps of the business, and then we'll open the line to answer any questions you may have. The usual caveats: all dollar amounts we will discuss today are U.S. dollars, and VTI's fiscal year is coincident with the calendar year. We have quite a few new shareholders this quarter, so just as a quick introduction, VTI sells contact lenses, and our flagship product is a daily disposable soft contact lens called Natural View Multifocal. Natural View Multifocal is a revolutionary and globally patented contact lens targeted at two patient populations that have high clinical needs. The first population being people over the age of 45 who have difficulty seeing things close to their faces, such as a menu or a phone. This is a condition called presbyopia, and unfortunately, almost everyone over the age of 45 suffers from presbyopia. The other patient segment being prescribed the exact same Natural View Multifocal lenses as the presbyopic patients is composed of children who are nearsighted and progressively getting worse. This is a condition called pediatric myopia or myopia progression. These children can see things that are close but have compromised distance vision, which, of course, can affect academic and athletic performance and other daily tasks. Myopia progression affects around a third to a half of U.S. children, which is nearly double what it was 30 years ago, and affects 80%-90% of children in many Asian countries. We estimate that myopia progression market for soft lenses in China alone to be around $10 billion, approximately $2 billion in the United States. Even in Australia, which enjoys one of the lowest rates of myopia in the world, you've seen a sharp uptick in a percentage of children who are nearsighted. Unfortunately for these kids, poor distance vision and new glasses every year are the least of their concerns. These children are exposed to a lifetime of significantly elevated risk for blindness and other serious ocular diseases. Minimizing the severity of the nearsightedness they develop in childhood is very important. In a study of 141 children just released in January this year, which is an extension of data presented over the last couple of years just with larger numbers of children, which always increases the reliability of data, of course, Natural View Multifocal was shown to slow the worsening of nearsightedness in children by 90%, which is why Natural View Multifocal is being adopted by practitioners and parents around the world now. In addition to selling our multifocal contact lenses, we also sell lenses called Natural View Spheres for the correction of uncomplicated distance vision. It's worth reminding everyone just quickly that VTI's revenue represents sales to our fulfillment partners and that our fulfillment partners then sell our products to eye care professionals, which you'll hear to us refer repeatedly to as ECPs. The ECPs then sell the products to patients to provide as clear a window into the company's operations as possible. We report something called shipments to U.S. ECPs as our primary metric in addition to net revenue. Shipments to U.S. ECPs represent the dollar value of lenses that are shipped from our fulfillment companies to U.S. ECPs at the dollar pricing per lens that we charge the fulfillment company. As the ECPs do not hold material inventory, shipments to ECPs represent true real-time demand, while net revenue can, of course, be impacted by the timing of inventory build and depletion by our fulfillment partners. As international sales become more significant for us, we'll start to blend those dollars in as well. With that introduction, I'd like to hand over the mic to Brian, our CFO, Brian Lane. Brian, could you update us on the March financial quarter?
Yes, Stephen. The first quarter of the year set records for us in terms of our primary metrics: shipments to U.S. ECPs, dollar per active accounts, number of active accounts, and of course, net revenue. For the quarter ended March 31st, the shipments to U.S. ECPs grew 28% over the prior quarter to approximately 1.3 million and grew 158% over the same quarter last year. The last 4 weeks of the quarter were among the 10 largest weeks ever, and the last week of shipments in the quarter eclipsed the prior largest week by 11%. So really great statistics coming out of the quarter with momentum going into the second quarter. Net revenue grew to $1.1 million, representing 6% growth over the prior quarter and 104% growth over the prior the same quarter last year. The number of active accounts, which are accounts that purchased product within the quarter, grew by 194 accounts to 1,683, representing a 13% increase. We set some parameters at the end of last year in our 4C. This growth in number of accounts was within the guidance provided in the 4C from the December quarter. That guidance was growth of between 175 and 225 active accounts per quarter on average for the year. Also within guidance for the quarter was growth in dollars per active account, which came in at $87 compared to a guidance range of between $65 and $95. Contributing to these positive outcomes was the fact that 96% of U.S. ECPs who ordered in the December quarter ordered again in the March quarter, also a record for us and a sign that we interpret as ECPs being happy with the clinical value of our products that we provide and as a sign of high-quality revenue. Moving to gross margin, that grew in the quarter to 32% compared to 26% in the fourth quarter of 2018 and remains on track to deliver the 40% over the year 2019 that we forecast at the beginning of the year. The performance metrics that this quarter leave us pretty confident in our previous revenue guidance for the full year of 2019, which was between $6.5 million and $7.5 million U.S. dollars for the year. Gross cash outflows in the quarter were approximately $4.9 million, and cash receipts from customers were $1,155,000, which, along with a small amount of interest income, resulted in net cash used in operations of approximately $3.8 million. This net cash use was an increase over the prior quarter, primarily due to the timing of payments for payroll and administrative costs. We ended the quarter with approximately $3.5 million in the bank, which we expect to last until approximately August. Investors should expect gross cash outflow in the June quarter to be approximately $4.4 million, offset partially by increasing cash receipts from customers that should exceed cash receipts from the first quarter. Stephen?
Oh, that's great, Brian. Thank you very much for that. And Tony, maybe if you could give us a quick update on sales and marketing.
Certainly. Thank you, Stephen, and good morning, everyone. In sales and marketing news, our team has expanded BTI's international reach by launching our flagship Natural View Multifocal in one of the largest contact lens markets, the United Kingdom. This brings us to 9, the number of countries benefiting from our products. We also passed through the audit required for us to enter Canada and plan to launch in Canada as soon as administrative processing is completed, which we expect later in 2019. We're also awaiting clearance into the hospital channel in Hong Kong, which we still expect to enter in this year, and we are working to enter Singapore as well. So that's all very exciting as we continue to do our international rollout. Other Asian territories, for example, China and Japan, remain attractive opportunities for strategic partnering given their regulatory and commercial complexity. And we are engaged in those partnering discussions for those Asian territories. Again, very attractive, very large, and very complex. Within the United States, the sales force remains approximately the same as previous quarters as we continue to gain and get as much productivity out of our current sales force as possible before investing in further growth of headcount. We're seeing great pull in the U.S. as the brand becomes more common among practitioners, more discussed, more widely used, and practitioners become more adept in fitting. Additionally, awareness among practitioners and the importance of treating myopia as a progressive disease is increasing. This is a worldwide phenomenon, but it is also increasing in the United States, which is a core market for us. Though we're the only company with a daily disposable soft lens in the U.S. that corrects the optical risk factors of myopia progression. We do have our work cut out for us, as we don't get the benefit of the larger companies beating an easy path for us, which is part of our strategy overseas. So with that, Stephen, back to you for the wrap-up.
Thank you, Tony, and thank you, Brian. Bottom line for this quarter, from my perspective, is that the business is growing on track very, very well. We continue to demonstrate demand for our products now in an international setting that will drive the company towards eventual profitability. Our plans for international expansion continue on track, and we've delivered very well against our promises for international expansion. Most importantly, though, we want to strongly assure shareholders that the company's cash position is of top priority for the management team right now. It's what we're working on day and night, and we're working on multiple avenues to bring cash into the company at the lowest possible price of capital. Those avenues, of course, involve discussions with providers of debt, equity, and strategic funding, and our goal is to bring in funding through one or more of these avenues as soon as possible in a way that minimizes dilution to the shareholders. And, of course, we'll provide updates on this subject given its importance as we go along in the June quarter and new information becomes available. And with that, happy to open it up to any questions.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you are on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Matisse Smith from Canaccord. Please go ahead.
Good day, Stephen, and congratulations on I think a pretty solid March result, and certainly the feedback I've had from people is they were very comfortable with the operations and where they're going. Just first off, a couple of clarifications around the numbers. The elevated staff costs, does that really just relate to the fact that you're paying the 2018 bonuses during this quarter, so that kicks it up and will get returned to lower levels for the subsequent quarters?
Yeah, Brian, you want to swing at that one?
Sure. I think, Maddie, what you're talking about is really it's just a cash phenomenon in that during the quarter, you know, you're looking at the 4C. What you're seeing is cash that actually went out the door. We had 7 payrolls in the first quarter, whereas the fourth quarter only had 6. So
okay.
It's primarily just a matter of timing.
Okay, that's good to know. Second question in relation to inventory, and obviously, you know, with a slightly precarious cash position, this is a more difficult one to navigate, but I think, you know, we've had a little bit of a holiday from being able to use inventory. How much longer can we do that, or are we starting to get close to sort of the bare minimum of inventory levels we can carry?
We're about halfway there. Go ahead, Stephen. So, Maddie, I think we're about halfway there.
Go forever. Go ahead, Brian. Sorry, delays.
Everyone loves this question, obviously.
Stephen, why don't you take it?
Yeah, so obviously we can't keep selling more than we're buying in perpetuity, Maddie. But, you know, you're right that, you know, we want to be very, very careful with our cash. I do expect, you know, and it's in the 4C that you'll see a slight uptick in the second quarter for buying the minimum inventory that we think we need to keep the company at the lowest possible risk from an inventory perspective. Obviously, we intend to bring in additional funding in the second quarter. And that would mean that as we go into the third quarter, you'll see us start to build those inventories back up. But it's obviously a balance that, you know, we're being very, very careful about.
Yep. And I guess my next question is a follow-on from that. You know, as you're starting to go into these new markets, you know, currently in Australia and the UK and hopefully in Canada and Asian markets over time. What's the cost of opening up those markets? I mean, I presume there's a initial investment, at least in fit sets, that need to be placed in that. So, you know, is there a high cost burden in going in these, or is it quite manageable?
It's quite manageable from our perspective, and the lenses really aren't so much the issue as we enter into the markets, because remember, we're selling to distributors who are then taking care of the entire sales and fulfillment function. So from a lens perspective, it's really just a cost of financing the inventory for a very short amount of time. But what we do provide when we go into new countries, and maybe Tony can speak to this briefly, is a bit of marketing support. That's with resources that we generally already have on staff, but, you know, there is a cost with some marketing materials, travel, that sort of thing. Tony, do you want to just sort of talk through really quickly how we launch a new territory and just sort of, you know, how that impacts our cost structure in the short term?
Certainly. So great question, Maddie. So one of the key things that we do take a look at is how do we best support our distributor partners within the market, and there are three ways that we do that. The first, of course, is training of their personnel, not only on the product itself, but on also all of the key learning, so we can accelerate their uptake that we gained in almost 3 years in the market in the United States. So there's a lot of common objections and common success strategies that we relay. So there's some cost to that. From the initial training, but we do a lot of it remote, believe it or not, using Skype and other means and Zoom. The second thing that we do, of course, is we do social media and digital marketing within the market itself. We've just begun that in ANZ as well as in the United Kingdom. That is a small cost, again, given that it's social and digital. And again, we're running the template from the United States as far as our media mix, and then we adapt the local messaging with our distributor partners' help to make sure that we don't stick our foot in our mouth and be culturally insensitive. And the third and final thing to do is actually very direct and is a high ROI event, which is we will go into the market with American speakers, at least initially, and participate in a large trade show event, as well as host dinner meetings and receptions. These are standard kind of things that you do in medical device worldwide. And we actually shoulder the burden on that and do the first few in order to get them set up, as well as give our distributor partners, quite frankly, confidence again in our expertise and the system for the lens. So kind of long-winded, but there's three prongs that we do.
Okay, but certainly by the sounds of it, there's not a big cost burden in terms of opening up these markets because you're going down the distributor route.
Yeah, correct. It's not correct. Huge, Maddie. You know, it's worth pointing out we do have a consultant that we use for international work that costs us a little bit of money, you know, but the investment we think, you know, is well worth the longer-term return we get from those international partnerships.
Okay, and just one final question, and I had a go at this last time, so I have another go this time. In terms of maturation of the accounts, you previously, you know, were reporting, you know, a certain number of accounts that were above a level of sales, I think 2,000 and above $5,000. I would say, you know, the feedback I've had is people like those numbers just to understand how they're going. So maybe, Tony, can you give us some insight in terms of how the more mature, you know, what's the maturity of an account starting to look like now that you've been in the market for, I guess, a couple of years? How long is it taking up? Are the majority of getting there? Because my feeling is, you know, having an average number of revenue per account probably doesn't give us gives the market a feeling for the practices that are saying, actually, we really like these lenses and use them, or are there some problems with getting that adoption? So just want to get a feeling for you know, what more mature accounts look like and how long they're taking to get there and how that matches up with the initial goal that the company had of having the majority of accounts sort of between $5,000 and $12,000 in revenue per year.
Well, Maddie, we're going from strength to strength. I think to your point about the average revenue, if you look at our tracking for our revenue growth, especially shipments to U.S. CCPs, which is what I use when I look directly at the account level detail, you will see that it does track. They are growing. They are growing as we would expect. Something that we report on at board meetings. The interesting thing that I'm seeing is that our strategy of going deeper within our territories is paying off. So, yes, we do have breadth of accounts as we fill out and mature the territories as far as number of fit sets deployed. But we also are going deeper within each territory with their accounts. You're seeing in the average number and then the actual number of accounts that are above 5,000 is steadily increasing and meeting our expectations. So we're actually seeing not only a broad-based growth, but we're also seeing our large accounts not only continue to get larger, but that actual number of large accounts is growing.
Is there a point you see like almost a tipping point within an account where, you know, they start getting more comfortable and suddenly you sort of have a slow burn and then they say, right, you know, we're comfortable with these, we're happy to use it, whether they're using it predominantly in presbyopes or pediatric myopes is kind of probably practice dependent, but a point where they sort of, you know, maybe take 6 to 9 months and then say, right, we're happy, and you really see an uptick in the number of patients they start fitting with these lenses?
Yeah, there generally is a tipping point, and it does vary for practice based upon the practice strategy. A lot of it looks at our own territory management, where we select a certain number of accounts and have a hyper-focus on those accounts. Again, as we said before, our fitting protocol is not difficult, it's just different. And so you actively have to manage those ECPs, regardless of their nationality or location. You must select 5, 10, 15 per quarter to really build them up. And it does take, and it does vary based upon the individual practice dynamic, but you can clearly see 6, 9, sometimes 12 months, but it's usually when the territory manager has selected them properly and educated them thoroughly and then support them throughout the initial few fits, you start seeing the fitting behavior and the number of patients fit and purchased climb. And you can literally see it within the numbers at the account level. It's very exciting.
Okay. Now that sounds good. I'll step off.
What I'm also seeing, Maddie, just to help you with this, is that we haven't seen a top-out yet. You know what I'm saying? It's not like there's a stall period for our larger accounts. They continue to find reasons to use the lens, because there's many reasons you can use this lens within your practice. And they continue to gain confidence, have a learning curve, and find practical application on all sorts of patients within their practice. Mm. It's really exciting. It's very gratifying.
It does sound encouraging. Go ahead.
Yeah, quickly, Maddie. As you remember, we shifted our focus somewhat because we're not growing a sales force towards developing depth within the account. And with a 96% repurchase rate, it really tells you that, you know, our field is composed of people who are happy with the product. And with the shipments to ECPs growing in the United States, and couple that with a 96% repurchase rate, it tells you that the current accounts are the ones that are driving most of the growth. Because obviously the new accounts, you know, start off very, very slowly with a flattish ramp. So it does, I think, the combination of the growth in shipments, the high repurchase rates, and the slower rate at which we're adding new accounts tells you that the existing accounts are really starting to pick up and really drive the growth of the company, which is exactly what you want to see. What we don't want to see is, you know, what I consider low-quality revenue, and that would be having to add new accounts all the time to keep the numbers growing. And, you know, that's exactly not what we're seeing. We're seeing the opposite of that.
Yeah. And it does kind of come through in the average revenue per account, but if you do have an ability to sort of provide some data that lets the market know what that account maturation profile, it's certainly something that I get a lot of questions about when I'm speaking to various investors. So just would encourage you to go down that route if you can. It'd be very helpful.
Well noted. Thanks, Matty.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from Mark Pachas from BioShares. Please go ahead.
Oh, good day, guys.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi, Stephen. Congratulations on a good quarter. I've got a few questions for Brian, a few questions for Tony, a couple for Brian, and none for Stephen. Tony, just wondering if you could just following on from that dialogue with Matthias, just interested in some of the trends with the that you're seeing on the ground level there. I think I asked you this same question last time, but is the demand coming from the slowing the myopia progression in kids? Is that one of the key selling features at the moment, or is the ease of fitting, or what is it that's attracting the optometrists into using your lenses at the moment?
So a lot of our, thank you for the question. So a lot of our inbounds in the United States as far as leads and queries are for pediatric myopia. And that's been fairly consistent. We've spoken about before. But what we find, though, is that most of the fitting behavior, and this is anecdotal and through observation, is actually on presbyopes in the United States. And that's mainly because of how we market the lens and position the lens. However, overseas, in the United Kingdom, within Europe, and in ANZ, we're focused on myopia progression messaging for pediatrics, and the vast majority of our fits, we believe, are coming from children in the overseas markets. And the reason we have this split strategy is simply due to regulatory.
So you can make those claims overseas, but you can't make those in the U.S.?
Correct. So there's a great deal of interest, and we do know that doctors are putting it on children in the United States. The majority of our sales revenue is coming from what we call parents. Whenever I'm asked about pediatric myopia in the United States, I always tell them that children have parents, and odds are the parents are presbyopic.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Where are the sales being made? Are they being made to? Is it mainly for new customers or like for new patients for those optometrists, or are they starting to switch over some of their existing customers, their existing patients?
So there's a dynamic in the United States where in a practice, you know, your absolute number of fits will grow slightly. So there are new patients that come in. But what we're seeing, and Stephen spoke to this, you know, we're focused on our current customers, and there are multiple uses for the lens within those customers. So what we're finding is that for patient selection and what we call reaching for the lens, we are gaining a more and more favorable place, gaining market share, if you will, within each of our practices, particularly those that we target and spend a great deal of time, you know, rep time on. So, and you can see it in the numbers, both at the account level and then, of course, in these averages that you see in the 4C. So it is very exciting. We're gaining market share within existing practices.
Right, so they're switching over.
Yeah, Mark, just really quick on that subject, you know, just so you understand how a sales works, when a lens of ours is sold, we don't know whether it's a patient repurchasing or whether it's a new patient. You know, it just shows up as a lens sold. Because of U.S. privacy laws and healthcare, we don't have any access to who that patient is, whether they're a repurchasing patient, whether they're a new patient, what they are. But what we do know is that the growth in the in-account growth of sales of our lenses far outpaces the growth of new fits in a typical practice. And there's just no way without really strong repurchases from patients that we could see the growth in shipments that we're seeing right now. So just a little caveat there to help you understand. You know, it's a lack of information we have to infer from what we're seeing. And what we do know is that, you know, new fits are a very low percentage of visits to the optometrist, and that, you know, without really good repurchase behavior on the patient's behalf, we couldn't get anywhere near to the growth that we're seeing in shipments right now.
Okay.
Clarification, and I concur.
Yeah. And is the demand from the inquiries from your current customers, optometrists, for the a fuller range of lenses, like for the astigmatism and so forth?
Yeah, so currently we have two lenses in the market right now, of course, the multifocal, and we do have a spherical, single vision, non-complex design. We do have queries about our upcoming new products, which will be the toric and the multifocal toric. Of course, those are not yet in the market.
Okay.
The majority of our new inquiries are from the multifocal.
Yeah. And a couple of questions for Brian. Brian, just trying to get an understanding of your gross margins down the track. So thanks for providing your estimates for this year. Just in trying to do the spreadsheets of analysis on it, what sort of gross margins do you think is sort of a terminal gross margin you can achieve on your products down the track in 3 or 4 years' time?
I didn't fully understand that, Mark. Sorry.
Just with the gross margins, where do you expect them to reach sort of 70% or 80% down the track?
Okay, so yeah, I think what we said at the in the 4C for the fourth quarter was that, you know, we'd start off the year around 30%, we'd grow to 45% by the end of the year, and on the year we would average about 40. And yep. So we just came in at 32% for the first quarter. So we're well within what we were expecting at that point. But we do expect them to continue to increase through the year.
Yes. Can you give me an indication of what, you know, sort of a terminal gross margin might be down the track with the business?
Oh, okay, terminal. Yeah, we expect terminal to be in the 50% range or more. But we still have, you know, when we initially started, we had to buy lenses at a higher price, and we still have a lot of those higher price lenses in-house. So until we clear through those and we get a little bit better buying power based on, you know, buying more, we're still going to be, the 40 range is where we can expect to get to by now. As we get further down the road, we think we can get up higher into the 50s.
Yeah. Okay. And your gross cash outflow, if that's smooth, do you expect that to be sort of around $4.5 million a quarter? Is that about right?
Yeah, I think Matthias started going down the road. You know, right now we're in a little bit of a lull as far as purchasing lenses. We do expect that to pick up during the year as our revenue grows. So, but then obviously at the same time we've got more revenue coming in. So gross probably does go up, but net goes, you know, we're expecting net to stay about even, you know, through the rest of the year.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Matisse Smith from Canaccord. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking the follow-up. I was just curious, Tony, and I appreciate, you know, you don't have a lot of information on which patients are using what, but just anecdotally from when you're going around talking to the practices, do you have a feeling for if the majority of patients that are getting fitted with natural view are patients who have, you know, just getting a new diagnosis, or are you finding that a lot of it is people, particularly, I guess, in the presbyo area, are switching out of competitors' lenses into your lenses?
Yeah, so anecdotally, it is a mix, Maddie, as far as switching out of competitors' lenses. The dynamic is for a multifocal contact lens worldwide, If you have managed to get a patient into a multifocal lens, you leave them there. It's very, very challenging. It's one of the most challenging fits you can do on a day-to-day basis as an optometrist. So where we find a lot of traction is in new presbyopes, and then obviously in the rest of the world on any myopic children. So that's where we get a lot of traction. There are other breakpoints. Once the current multifocal center near, so the other designs, they get to a point of diminishing returns as far as different types of vision. When that occurs, usually between the ages of 48 and 52, optometrists will switch and switch them to natural view as well, because we give spectacle level visual acuity at all distances.
My understanding is if you were a presbyope who were using competitors' multifocal lenses, you essentially have one prescription for your distance lens, and then there's a series of, +1, +1.5, +2, +2.5 that probably you work through. You may switch every 2 or 3 years as your presbyopia worsens with age, and that would be an opportunity to switch into natural view where you don't have that consideration because the near vision is achieved using the aperture effect.
Absolutely, and in fact, that's one of the talking points I have. Doctors, it comes to a point where what you're using, you take people to what we call the high ad, because it does progress physiology, and then you get to the point of diminishing return for this folk between the ages of 48 and 52 in general, and that's when natural view becomes a very, very attractive opportunity for the optometrist, because they've done all this work and they're about to lose the contact lens patient because contact lenses are no longer effective, the competitive ones.
So if we think in terms of practice customer acquisition, it would be primarily new presbyopes, pediatric myopes, and then existing presbyopes who's may have some satisfactory lenses, but they will deteriorate over time. So sort of every 2 or 3 years, you could have a crack at one of those as well.
Exactly. And I actually guide some practices towards that in discussions.
Interesting. Okay, that's great. Thanks very much, guys.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to Dr. Snoddy for closing remarks.
Well, as usual, thank you everybody for your interest in Visionary Technologies. We've just finished up a great quarter with, as Brian articulated, very substantial momentum going into the second quarter of the year, and just again to reiterate our assurance that the cash situation is top and foremost in our thoughts right now. It's what we're spending most of our time on, with the goal of getting cash in as soon as possible and at the lowest cost of capital possible to protect the shareholders. And again, we'll continue to update on the subject as the second quarter progresses, but just know that we're working very hard on that. Again, thanks for your attention and your interest, and we'll look forward to getting back in touch with you next quarter. Thanks. Bye-bye.